Hey everyone, it's Mary Lou Tyler. This week's guest is Liston Witherell, and he has a really cool offering on servedontsell.com. What I really love about what he's doing is he's taking what we think of as the invisible, the intangible way to sell. Now, you and I know that most of what we talk about here on this podcast are widgets of selling something that you can like touch. And what Liston does is he works with sales executives and professionals in selling services. So it would be professional services. So if you have a professional service arm, he would be the one to help you take that business and grow it. And it's not all referral, right? So one of the things we always say is, oh, well, professional services, that's referral. You're working with clients. Well, I am here to tell you that Liston has a methodology and a process that he's going to talk about today of how to grow your business. And this is a professional services, independent consultants, firms that are not selling widgets, and how to take control of that and actually build a pipeline so that you can consistently and predictably close your deals. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. And predictable is right on brand. So I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, very good. So what got you in this? You know, this is kind of always a gray area for us. And your professional services will grow. You know, So what got you focused on this really important and, you know, niche-y kind of selling environment?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say niche-y because basically the whole economy is moving more towards a service model. And increasingly I'm seeing even software companies starting to add services and consulting arms to their product offerings as they start to consider how do we continue to grow revenue and also how do we make customers more successful with our product, especially big enterprise offerings. So what got me into this? I'm a scientist by training. I have a master's degree in environmental science and management. And my stated goal to go to grad school was to go into consulting, which, you know, is what every little kid wants to be when they grow up. If you ask a five-year-old, I want to be a consultant. After grad school, you know, what I wanted to do was learn the business of consulting. So going into grad school, the idea was I really need to understand the science of the environment and how this works. And then I wanted to go operate on the business side of environmental consulting. So I was the director of marketing and business development at not a huge firm. We had about 80 people. We were doing about $8 to $10 million when I got there. And we grew steadily over a few years. And while I was there, I kept asking the question, obviously, this was my whole job. How do we grow the firm? What is driving our growth now? What have we done in the past that has worked or hasn't worked? And also importantly, why am I surrounded by so many experts who have this really weird, awful feeling about selling anything? Mm-hmm. Like it was really interesting that a lot of them, their orientation towards their job is, you know, in this case, I do science, I do my expert work, I'm not in the business of selling anything. But of course, their compensation was determined by how much revenue they brought in. So obviously they were selling something. And, you know, I've been kind of on a quest ever since I started that job and eventually went out and started my own marketing firm to figure out what is it about services that are so damn hard to sell.
Right, right. And speaking from someone who is in awe of what you're doing right now, because it's one of those things for me that I don't understand the multiples of professional services. Like, can you make it tangible so that my brain is always wrapped around going IPO or growing from the standpoint of a capital sort of thing, as opposed to what I consider operational, which is I lump professional services into that. And then the second thing I'm always stymied about is those are relationship sales. And a lot of times it takes long to establish a relationship. Mm-hmm. And the work that I do is like duty dating. And the work that you do is like engagement and getting married kind of thing. And this is me talking, which, you know, this is me not understanding, even though here I am a consultant, right?
Right.
but most of my work, I do outbound work and I get referral and inbound. It's a pretty nice mix. So it's really interesting that you've developed a system for it. And what I'm really curious about is how you go about getting people started on this path who are naturally reluctant because mm-hmm. they view sales as a not so nice word, you know? Yeah. It's something that they don't want to be associated with. So why don't you share with us, you know, when you get someone in and they want to grow their business and they're only selling services, you know, how do you organize them down that success path so that they start seeing the value of this as a repeatable portion of their pipeline?
Well, so the first thing I tell them is kind of the mindset part, which is you got to kill your inner salesperson. So Mary Lou, you know all the stats about how salespeople are one of the most hated professions in existence.
Yeah.
And the reason is we all have had some sort of negative experience with that salesperson who was willing to be manipulative, which is different than persuasive, right? Meaning they are using parts of the truth in order to move you in a direction that maybe you wouldn't choose otherwise if you heard the whole truth, right? Which is very different than persuasion. We have experienced people who are totally self-serving, right? All they care about is getting the sale so that they can get their commission or add revenue to their bottom line. And so I think what a lot of people feel when they hear the word sales is that means I'm going to lose my integrity. And my integrity matters a lot, right? As a service provider, my reputation is kind of it's like a core business asset in terms of attracting new clients, in terms of maybe even being able to charge a price premium. That reputation is critical. And so I don't want to trade that off by being this nasty sort of used car salesman, of course, is the image everyone conjures. So right. Where I start is I say, kill your inner salesperson. You don't need to be that version of sales. And I think the other thing as I've done this work has been really obvious is when someone says the word sales, mm-hmm. 10 people can mean 10 different things.
Right.
Right. And so we need to get an understanding of what that means. So the way I define it, and when I say serve, don't sell, what I mean is the goal of a sale is to help people make an informed decision about the outcomes that they want, whether they choose us or not.
Yeah.
Right. And so what I want to be is an educator. And so in that way, when I'm working with experts and service providers, all I tell them is, look, the sales process, your expertise is fairly invisible to that prospect or buyer in the beginning. What you have an opportunity to do throughout the sales process is demonstrate what it will be like to work with you in some small way right away, right? Which isn't to say give away free work, but it is to say be organized. It is to say predict and understand what questions are going to be asked and how you respond to them, right? These kind of fundamental things that I think are, if not unaddressed, underaddressed by most service providers is where we always have to start.
One of the things that I have noticed in working with people who don't consider themselves sales professionals is that they feel like they're bugging people. So not only do they not like the sleazy sort of, you know, that people, they don't want to be identified with that. There's also this other aspect is that they don't think they can add value every time they pick up the phone or every time they are face to face or every transaction or conversation that they have, they feel like they're bothering people. And I see that more in areas where you're selling professional services than perhaps widgets. Mm-hmm. Do you find that that's another portion of this that you have to, you know, like unprogram them for? Is that you're not bugging people, you're adding value? Does that go hand in hand with what you said about educating and demonstrating what it's like to work with you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think kind of the key driver of that feeling is the curse of knowledge, right? As an expert, we have like 400 or 500 level understanding of a topic.
Yeah.
And our clients have maybe a 100 level understanding
yeah.
of our area of expertise. And so we quickly forget what it was like to be that 200-400 level student. Mm-hmm. And therefore we forget how easy it would be for us to add value to the client. You know, the other thing that I would say is, in these situations, it's, and you know this from prospecting and in any sort of outbound effort, mm-hmm. if you can help or prompt people with kind of a yes or no decision, or an easy, like a relatively easy decision to make.
Yes.
That can help them qualify themselves, right?
Right.
So one of the big mistakes, and you must have preached this for years, is leading with something like, you know, do you have 30 minutes for a meeting next Tuesday, is not where we want to start with anybody, right? Yeah. But if I'm an accountant and someone has come to me and said, my books are a mess, I don't know if I can hire anybody right now, and I want to make sure I hit 20% profit margin this year, I don't think you're bugging them if you reach out and say, you know, hey, are you ready to make sure we hit this profit margin together? Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. That's not bugging them.
No.
So I think there's this human tendency, and this isn't limited to service providers, it's just human nature, to focus on the negative experiences, right? So that time when a salesperson just would not get the message and would never stop bugging us, and sometimes legitimately they are annoying, we can agree on that, some of them are, mm-hmm. We tend to remember those moments and not the moments where I was interrupted in the middle of the day. I picked up my phone and I was like, yeah, I do have mold in my basement. Let's talk about that. Your timing is perfect, mm-hmm. right? So I think we overweight some of those negative experiences, and that's part of the problem.
Yeah. But falling under the heading of mindset, I mean, there, what I like to do is substitute the word selling for adding value, you know, because every time, in fact, I have a post-it note pasted on my, it's kind of wrinkly right now, but it says, how can I add more value? So every day I'm looking at that, how can I add more value? How can I be more of a advisor, a trusted person that you know you can call and ask questions of? And that's really where I see myself, is more on that, a mentor and giving back, whatever you want to call it. That also, I think, elevates you to a place where when you do have these conversations, you're doing good work. You know, you're really helping. And I think that if we can get over the sales versus, like you said, service, you know, serve, don't sell. That's perfect. That's a perfect way to think about how we can navigate through a sales process if we don't consider, especially if we don't consider ourselves a salesperson.
Well, right. And what I tell my clients is, you know, I'm not asking you to become a salesperson. Mm-hmm. I'm asking you to have better communication skills, is really what it comes down to, right? So why is it so hard to sell services? Well, they're intangible.
Right.
It's like a black box. I don't get to see what's on the other side. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, all I have is your word that you're awesome and that you can deliver for me. And of course you're going to say that,
right?
Why wouldn't you say that? And so, you know, the more we can kind of demystify what it's like to buy from us, mm-hmm. you know, there's this, I have the circular argument, which isn't sufficient to explain it, but sums it up nicely. The reason services are so hard to sell is they're so hard to buy.
Right.
And, you know, and there's lots of reasons for that. Some of it comes down to trust. Some of it comes down to the opaqueness. Some of it may come down to your lack of clarity and what people will actually be getting, both in terms of features and benefits. Mm-hmm. So, you know, are they buying inputs or are they buying outputs or are they buying value? You know, you should be really clear about that up front, right? So, you know, I think all of those things kind of add up to increase clarity of communication. And a lot of folks also will say, this is the other objection, Mary Lou, is you don't understand my services, you know, they're just hard to sell because no two clients are alike.
If I had a nickel for every time I heard that.
Right. And I always say, okay, cool. Well, let's look at your five top clients. What problems did they have? Right. And we could just map out very easily. And I can disprove that in less than 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. I could say, oh, actually, I think you're just maybe being too specific or you're choosing the wrong categories, but certainly we can identify patterns and why people buy from you. And if you're truly right about the idea that no two clients are the same, you're lacking focus in your business, right? And that's sort of a separate problem that we can't solve in sales. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of reasons for why folks are feeling this way, but there's also the good news is all of them can be addressed.
Pretend our mindset is now ready to absorb the next step or the parallel step of actually putting together a system, a selling system that encompasses what you talked about. I heard you say map. I heard you say building a list of what motivates people. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that part of it, because you also meant one of the things that I would struggle with doing this is substantiating my claims or with proof and specificity.
Oh, sure.
You know, and that I think is, it's the bane of all my folks' existence is we can find the challenges. We can contrast that to how life could be or should be or will be. But then when we're trying to substantiate the claim that we are the best choice for them, that's where things get a little muddy. So I'm curious to hear from you, the system itself of preparation, because I am a big fan of preparing and planning. Yeah. So if I was coming in selling my product, you know, which is advisory services, if you will, the selling system, what does that look like?
So first step, let me just walk through the steps and then I want to come back to what you said about, building credibility or showing proof, right?
Okay.
Substantiating your claims.
Right.
So, four steps. Number one is draw the map. So in order to draw a map, we need to know where we're standing and where we plan to go. And only then can we plan a route. And I think a lot of service providers haven't even sat down to say like, okay, for me to get a new client, what needs to happen? Do I need to sign an NDA? Do I talk to the business owner or do I have five people involved? Who's involved? Right. Do I need to talk to the head of IT? Like we need to figure out what that is. Mm-hmm. Back to this premise of it's hard to sell services because it's hard to buy them. Your clients may not know how to buy your services, right? And so right. your responsibility is to teach them. And mm-hmm. so drawing the map really comes down to having a goal for every meeting and understanding what needs to happen start to finish in order to close a new client, and then setting up an agenda and next steps. And these are kind of the bookends on every meeting. What are we going to do today? And what are we going to do next? And if you can do that, you're going to greatly accelerate the process and win more deals. Right. Step two is to understand clients' motivation, right? So the way I think about this really comes down to pain and reward, right? So we have two systems in our brains, system one and system two. This comes from Dan Kahneman and Amos Tversky. System one is kind of like the automatic part of our brain, right? And so that's the survival part, the quote unquote reptilian brain. So things that are painful, we want to run away from, right? Because that's how we survive. If a lion's coming at us, you know, don't bother asking me what the meaning of life is. I just need to get away from the damn lion, right?
Indeed.
So we, you know, in the sale, we have both pain and we have gain that we need to message around. So right. the gain is, what is that awesome future that this client could reach? But the pain is, why should you even consider doing it? Like, what's wrong with you now? And both of those need to be present. I've had some public arguments with my friend Jason about like, which one is more impactful. Mm-hmm. From an evolutionary standpoint, we're much more motivated to avoid pain. But I would say from a sales standpoint and a marketing standpoint, it's really effective to message around how awesome the future can be. And then in the sale, identify what are the causes of pain that makes the client attracted to that message in the first place.
Yep.
And the only way we can do this is by asking great questions, right? And understanding each individual's motivation.
Okay. Yeah, I think just to comment on that, what we like to do is state the pain and then have a contrast. So like the, you know, the example of that would be the fat skinny ads that are very effective because you can visually see someone who's not in great shape, maybe not as happy, has a frown on his or her face. And then on the next side of the page is the outcome, you know, that you're going to be like this. So that's the combination of the two together, the pain of something and the gain that you can expect. And that rises to a level of desire that also can motivate people to act. So we like, in our messaging, we like to combine the two, and then that proof and specificity to give them a reason why to act now is so we use all of those things you just said in item number two is the motivation, pain and gain, and then this new normal of what they can expect that they may not even have thought of yet because they haven't been involved with the work that you do.
So I want to get to that last point. That's my step number four, because I think we need to go a long way of painting the picture for our client about how things can be different. So step three is about helping people make decisions, right? And this is where most service providers fall down in being able to charge and actually get premium pricing. And the reason for that is I think a lot of people don't understand that the way we make decisions is based on comparison and relative information, right? So Mary Lou, one way that you can charge premium pricing, you have tons of accolades, you have this podcast, you have a really famous book that you wrote, right? But it's also helpful if someone's talking to you and you say, okay, why? Why do you want to hire me? Like, what will you get out of this? Right. And you can go through this value setting exercise where the whole point of that exercise is for the client to anchor herself onto that awesome outcome that they're going for. Right. And whatever that outcome is, if you're targeting the right prospects, your price is going to be a small fraction of that.
Right.
That is a way to help people decide. Also, a lot of people make the mistake of showing one single price or giving one single option, which is not the way most people make decisions. So I just upgraded my home kind of video studio here where I shoot my YouTube videos and do these interviews. And I will tell you, I looked at a lot of cameras before I made a decision, right? Mm-hmm. And that's common. Now, I don't believe in services people will shop around to that extent. Right. But we need a way to justify to ourselves, why am I making this decision? So we need both the emotional, right? Like, what is it that I want and what am I aspiring to? But we also need the rational. Oh, this is a good idea because X, right? And usually it's justifying the investment. And then step four, so I think we should dwell on this a little bit, is in showing what's possible. And I like to tell stories here, right? So if you follow my methodology, you gave your client the map in the beginning, you told them, here's what we're going to do, here are all the steps that we need to take, and we're going to have our first, second, third call, right? In the second step, I went to the client and I figured out what is motivating them to make a change, both positive and negative motivation.
Yeah.
In the third step, I'm giving them ways to make a decision. Now in the fourth step, I'm going to illustrate for them exactly how this is going to work, right? I'm going to tell a story about where they are now and where they're going. And then the only logical conclusion of that story is how my solution will be the one to help them. This is all assuming you're talking to the right people, right? I'm not a fit around square peg in a round hole kind of person here. You know, if you're doing your qualification right, you should disinvite anybody early on from your sales process and from doing business with you. But assuming you're talking to the right people, this story should just be the absolute natural conclusion to this person's problem. And, you know, it's interesting. I have a very particular way of putting together a slide deck, which I know some people in services are allergic to slide decks, but kind of my barometer for how mature your sales process is can you put together a slide deck that does your whole presentation in under 10 slides?
Oh, I like that.
And a lot of people can't, right? But I'll tell you exactly what those slides should be and why, right?
Okay.
We don't have time to go into that right now, but you know, putting together that deck allows me to message both around feelings and facts. Mm-hmm. And it allows me to tell a story of where they're starting from to where they're going to end up and exactly what I'm going to do to help guide them there.
Right, right. That's great. I mean, I like the, I do love the idea of a deck like that. We used to call them pitch decks, but you know, they're not supposed to, that sounds
which is
very
a dirty sad. Word now.
I know that sounds very salesy. So, yeah. But it did cover the reason why and where we are today and what the issues are associated with that. Sometimes we did interviews ahead of time, so we got a clear understanding of their unique issues.
Right.
That don't exist anywhere else on the planet. Yeah. And you know, from there we can embed that in there and then go through not as detailed. I love this step number three about helping people make decisions. Cause I think that even in the product world, we can get people excited about what this can do for them. And remember, in my world, a lot of times once we qualify them from the standpoint of, you know, they fit the round hole and then with the round pegs, we got that going, and they want to work with us and they want to explore more, we pass it over to a field salesperson usually who mm-hmm. takes it the rest of the way. And so we don't hit price very often. We give them a range and we're done. But I think this understanding of helping them make a decision is so important in order to avoid price issues, even with products, not just services, with products.
Totally. Yeah. I don't know if you know Blair Enns, but he's just an awesome business thinker, fantastic. And he writes a lot about pricing, and in his kind of core materials, one of the things he talks about is having the value conversation,
yeah.
right? And so that's really what I mean when I say help them decide mm-hmm. is give them the information, again, the information they need to make an informed decision.
Right.
So if you say to someone, you know, working with Mary Lou is $30,000 or $50,000,
right.
Well, that's devoid of all of the context of like, why should I even care about this, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, so what, 50,000? You know, to one person, that may sound like a fortune. To mm-hmm. another person, it would be like, oh, no, we're looking for more of like a $500,000 consultant.
Right, right.
So this idea of like, you know, this market, you know, this invisible hand that's guiding market prices often doesn't apply very well to services mm-hmm. and certainly doesn't demonstrate for the client what would be in it for them. What right. do they stand to gain? Again, both emotionally and from a rational standpoint. So, you know, the feeling of knowing that I can hire someone without going broke, man, what is that worth, right?
Right.
Like
right.
we may not be able to put a number on that, but to a business owner, that's worth a lot of money to me.
That's the biggest difference. I mean, and the ability to map the roadmap of growth. I mean, to get a sense and a comfort that you're not living peak and valley, that there is a glide path here to the revenue goals that you've set, or maybe you want to hand off your company to your family members or sell it to another firm or whatever it is. You know, there's something at the end of the rainbow there that you're trying to achieve, and to have a clear picture of that, that would get you out of bed every morning and making sure that, you know, you're adding value on a daily basis to your clients. That's great.
One thing I wanted to come back to is this idea of proof that you brought up earlier.
Yeah.
So this is a difficult one for services in particular, because like, you know, I use way too many software products, Mary Lou, I'll admit it. And I don't really need proof. Like they can put whoever they want on their website, but for a lot of software products, I can go sign up for a free trial or, you know, maybe sign up for a one month of the software for, you know, $50 to $100 or whatever it is. And I can go try it out. And I don't need third party stories nearly as much to make a decision because it's tangible. I can go try it. Mm-hmm. And services often don't have that. Now there are ways we can de-risk the client's decision by giving a smaller version of our service, but you know, for the most part, they're taking a giant risk. And so that's the way I look at it, is proof is so important in services because the information is so asymmetric. As the service provider, I know way more about what I'm doing than the buyer ever will, right? Whereas with a product, it's not, the balance is much different. And so, you know, I see a few different ways that you can demonstrate proof. One is, and I'm big on this, if you ask great questions that challenge the person's thinking to the point where they say, damn, I should have asked that question 5 years ago, that's going to start to prove to them that you understand their problems better than they do.
Right.
So this is a very underestimated way of proving that you understand your client and that you know what you're doing, is asking great questions. And the reason it's underestimated is because I can't really give you a formula on how to do this perfectly. Right.
Right.
But the more you specialize as a service provider, meaning you either focus on a single problem or you focus on a single vertical, or ideally both, a problem within a vertical, then you're going to be able to ask great questions. But now the sort of mechanical ways that we can do it, case studies, and all those are, the whole format for a case study is, where did your client start? What did they achieve? And what did you do to get them there? That's your case study format, right? Right. And then the other one is testimonials. What do people say out of their own mouths about working with you? I'd say that's less a thing in like really high-end enterprise or corporate services. And it becomes much more about case studies. Now, the one thing I'll say about case studies that a lot of people get wrong is they think if they have a collection of, you know, 3 or 5 case studies across all different client verticals, that that's going to work. And generally it won't. You need to present each client type. So by industry, by job title, however you sort of identify your perfect fit client, you have to have case studies that will resonate specifically for them. Right. So I work with business owners, right? So all my case studies that you'll see are with business owners. All of my testimonials are business owners, because then the person I'm trying to attract will read that and it will be more resonant with them.
Right. And what we do in our world is we have decision makers, we have direct influencers, and the direct influencers are the folks that will either get us to the first meeting or the table to start the discussion. They'll get us to the point where we can continue the discussion. And those people may not be involved in the actual decision-making process, but it is important that they see their peers and colleagues written up, or at least demonstrated that they're a part of this, making this decision for this solution that they're looking for. So that it's so important to segment that out, even for us, to have the decision maker as well as the direct influencers. And so they feel like, you know, you're talking to them in their language.
Absolutely. Yep. I agree.
So where do we go from here? I'm so excited. What kind of services do you offer? So if someone's hearing this and thinking, oh, this is like the holy grail for me, where do they go? What do they do?
So just go to my website, servedontsell.com. Plenty of free resources for you there. I also have a podcast, Modern Sales, if you're a podcast listener, which obviously you are, if you're listening to this. And if you wanted more help from me, I have a course called The Sales Sprint, which is a combination of some of the stuff I talked about here, but way more in depth. And I also have a private coaching program if you really, really want to figure out how to grow your business, your service business.
And this, you know, you dangled the carrot with this 10-slide presentation. Is that in the training that you offer?
It is in the training. Yes. Thank you for bringing that back. I appreciate that. Yeah, that's in the training. That's one of the modules, is all around how to take all the information you gather in throughout the sale, turn it into a deck and present it. And it's often a game changer for service businesses if they can get their services onto a deck, because it makes their sales more repeatable, capable of handing off and training other people on, and usually more profitable.
You know, and I will attest to that, because even in predictable prospecting, Jeremy wrote about, we call it a pitch deck, as I said, but he wrote about putting together these decks that are short and sweet, that cover, and he put, you know, what he thought would be very good to have in the deck. And it, I can tell you all that when you start implementing those decks and practice them and role play them and work through them, they are just winners all the way around. Your conversion rates are going to go up. So it's worth looking into this 10-slide pitch deck or deck, because it's going to help you organize your thoughts. It's going to help you understand the rhythm and the flow of what you need to do for those four steps of drawing the map, of understanding the client's motivation, of helping them make decisions, and then finally showing what's possible. Boy, this has been a great conversation, Liston. Thank you so much for your time. I'll make sure I put all your connections and all your links on the webpage for people so that they can learn more from you. Very much appreciate you spending time with us today.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me here.